it's gonna be dangerous, cause we're right and the government is wrong. We'll trample down their rights as we break inside their homes. We'll terrorize the sweet prize as we put the hard lean on. Yes, we're dangerous cause we're right and the government is wrong. Yes, we're dangerous cause we're right and the government is wrong.
With explicit reservation of all rights without prejudice per UCC 1-207.
There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time to
touch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Now with my popcorn-riddled teeth, I come to you live from Stronghold Radio. I am Dutch Jones. Today's date is the 23rd of June, 2011. It's approximately 5.02 p.m. Pacific time. If you're listening any other time, it's not live, but that's okay. Don't feel bad. We love the fact that you guys tune into our downloads, our archives, our pod necessity. Or if you listen on the replay on Ustream when it's up, our internet doesn't kick us off. Ustream's not the problem. It's our internet. Just got an email from some folks in Michigan. Well, a folk in Michigan who represents other folks in Michigan said they listen to us on the archive because they have to work during these hours. They have the night shift. And we admire that. We appreciate that. We know that people are working. And we know that everybody's trying to do the best they can. We didn't work today. We had kind of a strange thing happen. We had to go get a passport for our little girl. And I had to go sign an affidavit that she could go to Canada for like 7 days with her birth unit. Canuckistan, as Lou says here. So we had to go to a notary public. And when I got there, they said, do you have a picture ID? I go, I don't carry picture ID. I knew that was going to happen. So I brought... her stepdad came along and Stacy was there and they had to vouch for me. It was kind of nice. I'm like, well, I have two vouchers, human vouchers for me. I don't exist, but that's just the way it goes. It's a little cooler today in the high 90s. I don't think it broke 100, at least while we were up here. We did all kinds of fun stuff. We tried to stay cool. We wanted to go to the county museum today. And of course, as we were rolling up, they go, oh, are you folks coming to the museum? They go, yes, this nice little young lady in her 20s probably. Well, we're going to be closed till 1:30 for a staff meeting. I'm like, ah, great. It's like the second time we've gone there. One time we got there, they were just closing. They closed at like 4. And then this time we get there and they're closing. I'm going to write me an angry letter to the County Board of Supervisors. We homeschoolers get to use that museum very rarely because it's 50 miles away and they're always closed when we get there. So if I go one more time and it's closed, ooh, there's going to be heck to pay. But that was interesting there. What else? Did we do anything interesting when we were down? Oh, we wandered into the convention center there in Visalia, California, because Lou had to locate a porcelain receptacle device, and also it was air conditioned, so we thought we'd go stand in there for a while. And they were having a Job's Daughters convention. Huh? That guy has a lot of daughters. Yeah, that guy Job has a lot of daughters. If any of you know, I think Job's Daughters isn't that a Masonic thing? The stuff they were doing looked like it. Little triangular symbols everywhere, and the letter 3, you know, or the number, the letter 3, that's the heat, the number 3 everywhere, it wasn't, yeah, not the number, the letter 3, if you guys know anything about that, let me know. As I said here, I'm sweating again, I'm still sitting on my frozen 2-liter bottle, but I sacrificed two of my ice packs for the amplifier. I set them in front of the fan, in front of the amplifier, because it was starting to, we're hearing a whirring sound over there, we don't want to burn it up, so. I sacrificed two of my little things there, two of my little cooling pads. Hopefully 93.3 won't go off the air, because at 6 o'clock, remember, we're going to simulcast the pastor, so you have to go do the knob thing. So get that in your head loose so you practice. So we want to thank you for tuning in today. Glorious news. We get to keep Anthea till Sunday. I just said, nope, she's not going home yet. And we are going to keep her for another couple of days. And we just wanted to hear. I've been working and staying busy. You know what that's like. So I want to be able to spend some time with her. So tomorrow and Saturday, I'm going to dedicate to just family time. We're going to do family stuff. And then next week, we're going to work our butts off again, Lou. Let's see. Nothing new under the sun as far as what's going on here. We haven't changed anything. We're just excited about the different trainings we're going to do. And real quick, I got some news things I want to talk about. Just a couple things people have sent me. I got a couple emails. People said that I was a little harsh yesterday. No, I wasn't. I wasn't harsh enough. So if you can't hang with what I was throwing down yesterday, then you probably shouldn't listen to the show. Before we get into that, we're going to continue with that same thread yesterday. Here's something I want to talk about. Remember that guy that was wandering around Washington, D.C., more specifically Arlington Cemetery, with a notebook that says, like, Al-Qaeda rules, and he may or may not have had bomb-making materials? I mean, it vacillates back and forth. He had some spray paint. Well, this guy... This turns out pretty cool, because now they're claiming that he is the guy who was shooting up Marine recruiting stations. Remember several months ago? I can't remember the exact date, but I'm going to go into the article here. Officials, man linked to D.C. area shootings in 2010, so I guess it was more than a few weeks ago. Marine reservist who was detained during a security scare near the Pentagon last week has been linked to shootings last year at the Marine Corps Museum in Quantico and several D.C. area military recruitment station, officials said this morning. Actually, that was yesterday, so it would be Wednesday morning. Ballistic evidence appears to link, Yonathan Malaku, age 22, to the shootings. Two officials spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity, which tells you that it's spin doctoring, because the investigation is ongoing. Malaku of Alexandria, Virginia, is being held without bail on unrelated larceny charges involving car break-ins and that happened after the shootings. He has not been charged in last week's incident or the building shootings as of yet. Now, Malaku, a naturalized, that means he came here and they made him a citizen or they recruited him, from Ethiopia, a naturalized citizen of the U.S. from Ethiopia, was detained Friday after he was spotted carrying a suspicious backpack near the Pentagon containing what initially was feared to be bomb-making materials. Authorities said later that they were suspicious items were not explosive. Malaku, who had a notebook with the words Al-Qaeda and Taliban rules written on the inside. One of the officials has said, ooh, that's a nice breeze. No, the official didn't say that. I just said that. We had a breeze coming through. The context of the words was not immediately clear, but another law enforcement official has said that Malaku is not believed to have any links to Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist organization. Yeah, he's one of these, what would you call a lone Muslim wolf? A lone pig? A lone boar. We'll call him a lone wild boar. The shootings last year, all done with the same gun, did not injure anyone. The Marine Corps Museum was targeted twice. Two windows were shut out at the Pentagon, and a Marine Corps recruiting station in Chantilly, Virginia, outside Washington, was also targeted. At the time, FBI officials suspected that the shooter had some sort of gripe against the Marine Corps. Well, it turns out he's a Marine reservist. They're letting these guys into the military. They're not screening them. And here's the second. Remember the supposed child porn guy that they didn't cover up? I don't know what's going on. let's see. There were five shootings that he was involved with, in supposedly all within 40 miles of each other. Now, Malaku joined the Marine Corps Reserve in September 2007 and was assigned as a motor vehicle operator at a unit based in Baltimore. He was not deployed overseas. Well, that's probably good, because he probably would have killed Marines. Lieutenant Colonel Francis Piccoli said Wednesday the Marine Corps was in the process of trying to remove him from the service based on the grand larceny charges. Malaku has not tried to contest his removal. Just watch the spin doctoring on this. Another Muslim, another one of those people. And you look at him, and you can tell he's got a Middle Eastern appearance. He's got that dirtbag under the chin beard, where he's got a little mustache and it goes under, kind of an Abraham Lincoln looking thing. Never trust anybody with an Abraham Lincoln beard until you get to know him. I've been known a few people that have them that aren't too bad, but they kind of give me the willies. So that's kind of weird there. So that guy that was going around spray painting and all that kind of stuff, he was also possibly a shooter. makes you wonder how many renegades are floating around inside the Marine Corps and the Pentagon already. Mike, one of our listeners, posted there. And it is kind of creepy. Another thing that I noticed, I saw an article, and I'm just going to briefly touch on it. The same family has been making wiffle balls for, like, since 1957 or something. Go out and buy a wiffle ball and bat for you and your kids. They've tried other things. Nothing worked. They even had wiffle ball ties for a while, but they've just been sticking to the ball and bat. Let's support that company. Go out and do that, and you'll feel good about it. There was something else. I thought I posted it here. Where is it? There was a traffic report from one of our listeners of seeing a lot of heavy military equipment moving around the Oh, here it is. It didn't post the picture. That's why I didn't see it. Now, this site that I'm going to now, the name of it is kind of funny. Electortards? Is that what it is? Okay, the elected retards, theelectedretards.blogspot.com. Theelectorretards.blogspot.com. It's got a picture of this rather large fighting vehicle, one I haven't seen before. I don't know anything about it. It's got a hull like a boat on it. It says police rescue on it, but it's an armored vehicle. I mean, it looks like something that you would see in the best post-apocalyptic videos. It was taken outside of Chicago. And people are seeing this going around the country. I had some people ask about it yesterday in the chat room. What's with the military movements? We went down the road the other day, and we saw six flatbeds with Humvees, for multi-purpose Humvees, everything from just standard Humvees to the electrical generator ones to ambulances, green in color, moving south on the 99 outside of Sacramento. And we saw that going on, and a lot of people are seeing a lot of these things. It's really, really, really strange. That there are so many things being moved around the country, people telling you what to do, I'm losing my train of thought because of the heat here. Government bosses telling their employees to get into survival mode. Real creepy stuff. Scary stuff, stuff you don't want to have to worry about, but guess what? You got to worry about it. So when you see your enemy move, sometimes you got to figure out why they're moving and where they're moving. They may be drawing you off the line. They may be trying to get you to reallocate your forces, but something's going on. Something has definitely been going on for a long time, and it's coming to a fever pitch. We've been noticing some of our people, and I don't always share stuff with you because you guys already know it, new kinds of convoy markers going up all around the country. No, not these tack-ons or whatever they call them. Just new, strange markers. People being told to do different things that have government agency connections. So, I don't know. But the time has come, folks, for, you know, basically, and I can't come up with a non-vulgar way of saying this, but I think you know what I'm saying. Do something or get off, you know? Stop sitting on your hands. Stop whining and waiting for everybody else to do it for you. Stop asking me to send you videos and tapes and everything and start doing something. Now, those of you that are already doing stuff and ask me for videos and tapes, that's not you, but I'm talking about America in general. It's happened before. It'll happen again, and not just in America, but every society that's been set up since God created this planet. Rise and fall, ebb and flow. And right now, it's something like over 2/3 of the population in America live in cities. Back during the Great Depression, it was right around 50-50. And it was like there was, you know, somewhere around 10% of the population worked in agricultural jobs and provided the food. We talked about this yesterday, and some people wanted to argue with me about it. There's 3-day supply of food on the shelves. There's stuff in trucks, and then the manufacturers produce it. That's it. So whatever that supply chain is, let's say 7 days, that's it. That's all the food there is. They don't store warehouses full of flour anymore. You're not going to find 6 months' worth of crackers anywhere. It's gone within 72 hours. And you know what? Today, 1% of the workforce works on farms if they're working at all. It's heavily emphasized on mechanization, dependence on fuel, chemicals. When this country falls, there's not going to be any way for you to go to the store to buy a loaf of bread. Period. End of story. Get over it. Stop thinking you can store enough food and buy enough food from somebody else to produce it for you. Those days are going to be gone real soon. You don't have to look that far back. Just at the beginning of the last century in the Great Depression, those of you that went through the huge recession in the 70s will remember that there isn't going to be enough food. And what food there is, they're going to ration, and you're going to have to do what they say to get it. So unless you can grow it, preserve it, can it, dry it, freeze it, something, you're not going to have food to feed your family, and you're going to be whining and crying about it because you didn't listen to better people than me telling you that it's something you have to do. Even I've got maybe 6 months to 7 months worth of food stored up, but that's not enough. You have to have a means of production. In Russia, even the poor people have got farming tools and a method to go somewhere and farm. And if you're living in a city right now, or you're living in an arid part of America where there's no water, you know, and there's no means of doing everything, yeah, I don't want to hear you whine. And you better not show up here going, "Hey, Dutch, I used to listen to your show, but all I have is a roll of silver dimes. I didn't put away, I didn't buy anything, I don't have any seeds." Because I'm going to laugh at you in a real sad kind of manner, in a maybe even hysterical, because you have had enough heat and warning. I'm kind of in an angry mood today because I've been really mulling over it all night long. I'm mad at myself for missing a lot of opportunities. I had tons of money that has passed through my hands, and I haven't utilized it the way the Lord would have had me use it. I should have at least my own family structure to live in right now instead of living on church property. I focus too much on training other people. I focus too much on trying to get other people ready and kicking them in the butt that I've sacrificed my own family. I haven't trained them properly. I haven't gotten them motivated enough so that I know when I walk away that I can come back and things can get done. It's time that we all wake up, folks. And those of you, if you're sitting right now listening to the sound of my creepy little voice, and you're surrounded on four sides by streets, there's somebody living above you, there's somebody living below you, you look out your window and your only view is another window of some other wretched human being looking back at you, you're in deep, deep, deep doo-doo, folks. You're so far behind the eight ball, it's not even funny. And every excuse you make, every reason you give that you can't afford to, you can't try, there's no way you could do it, is another slash that you're just cutting on your own wrists. There's always something you can be doing. There is always something that you can be doing. Even if it's going onto BLM land and putting a stash of 5-gallon buckets down. Making your exit plan, your bug out plan, getting your backpacks together. Finding people to train with. Finding a location where there's a good Christian community that you can be part of. Finding a good church. Finding two other people. Instead of sitting around and whining all day, "Oh, it's all doomed. Nothing's going to happen." You know, everything. There's two kinds of people. They either say, "You're all crazy. This is never going to happen." Or the people say, "What's going to happen? It's just God's will. There's nothing I can do." I had somebody send me an email and said, "Well, you're talking all this gloom and doom, and I know God's going to do this." Really? You know what God is going to do? You really think that if you sit there in your prayer closet and rock back and forth for 10 hours a day that everything's going to be cheery and wonderful? For every time in the Bible that everything's been cheery and wonderful, I'll show you 5 times where God has just unleashed his wrath on mankind. It's time to get the seeds you need, the portability you need, the water purification you need, the training you need to use it. And stop counting on everybody else to have someplace ready for you to show up. I'm seeing a lot of that lately. There are a lot of people that want to come here once or twice a year, not abide in a month-to-month basis or a week-to-week basis if they're close, but yet they just show up when things get a little ugly and they go, "Hey, man, what's going on? Can I stash a couple 5-gallon buckets for the stuff in your basement?" And I used to say yes. I may still say yes because I figure they're not going to get here anyway and it's just free stuff for me. You know, I'll use it last resort. But these people that live in these inner cities, man, you're just kidding yourself. You're crazy. Things are completely different than they were like during the Great Depression. There's no food stores. We don't have like we do with our oil, strategic food reserve. We don't have it. Period. We just don't have it. Churches aren't going to have the ability to support you either because they've spent all their money on what? Basketball, midnight stuff, sending missionaries all over the world. They don't manage their money. You're going to have the Mormons maybe who are, you know, going to be able to do what they're going to do, but that's a whole other story. You really think you're going to be able to show up to your mainstream corporate Baptist church and they're going to go, "Sure, we got a place for you over here in the basketball court that we spent all that money on. You can live under a tarp with your family over here. Here's your beans and weenies for the day." That's going to go real fast. I guarantee you, you call 10 churches within half an hour radius of where you're sitting right now and say, yeah, can I talk to your disaster coordination person? And if they have one, and you get to talk to them, because they're probably not there, they're a volunteer, they're not actually in the church, and you say, so what is your shelter-in-place plan? They're going to go, well, we're not really. That committee meets every 3 months, and what we did is we went out and we got a couple of survival blankets, and we put together some basic planning. We have manuals. Yeah, that's what you're going to get. That's what you're going to get. And Warland's saying, remember all you people out there depend on medication like I do? Where's it going to come from? Where's it going to come from? If you're like me and you can have a 3-month supply, you know, great, 3 months. Whew, well, that's, what if this thing lasts a lot longer than that? Which I think it will. Are you studying alternatives to deal with your maladies? I know people that cannot live without their high blood pressure medicine. They will drop dead. Now, granted, some could say that about me if I don't have, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But you know what? I've made alternative discoveries, things that I can use out of the environment. May not be as good as the medicines that are synthesized, you know, the miracle of doctors, that God uses them. People haven't even thought of that. I know people that haven't put away a second pair of eyeglasses. I got a second pair of eyeglasses, and I'm dirt stinking poor. My family lives on about $800 a month. And that's because of the blessings of the church, that we work for the church, and our rent is very, very little, because we don't really pay rent, we just make a love offering. Our electricity we pay for, and those types of things. This country's headed for a fall. Today, yeah, I see freedom seeing that, where another thing I was leading to, they're doing a huge sell-off of our strategic oil reserve. Yeah, gas prices are going down to lull you into a false sense of like, hey, everything's going to be great. You know what my family is doing right now? Well, let me put it this way. You know what I'm doing right now? I'm making sure that our vehicles are running. I'm making sure our stuff gets put into backpacks and portable food containers, because we may be bugging out. Because I don't know what's going to happen when the zombies in these cities, like 500,000 people in Fresno and stuff, they know we're here. And right now, without the fellowship and support of everybody but me, Lou, and the pastor, we won't be much of a stronghold here. How are we going to hold everybody off? I'm very realistic about this. And no, I'm not bitter because people aren't coming up here to play with me and my ball. No. You folks should be doing this everywhere you're at. You folks should be doing this everywhere you're at. I don't care if it's Missouri. I don't care if it's upstate New York. You folks need to have been building these enclaves already. Pacific Northwest, yeah, great, wonderful. It's great up there. I just, you know, I see that and I just, my teeth grind because I'm like, what, huh? Yeah, I wish I could be there, but I've wasted a lot of my resources and a lot of my time doing stuff for other people. And I've decided to refocus a lot of this back on myself and my family. I take responsibility for it, not being a good steward of our resources, not being the best leader I can be for my family. And we're going to head into a little bit of advanced training here, and I'm not going to have all the time in the world for this radio show anymore. I don't even know if we're going to be able to do it every single day. I've made pleas for monthly support. Even if everybody just pitched in a few dollars every month, we would have no problem meeting our financial demands to keep the radio show on. But, you know, I know everybody listening can't send in $15 to $20 a month. But that's just the reality of it. And you guys need to make those same sacrifices in your life. People tell me things like, yeah, but I've always lived here. Oh, my family's from here. Well, if your family's ignoring you, let's put it this way. If you were in a ship and it was sinking, and you put your lifeboat in the water, and you got into it with your family, and you had ration supplies, a compass, oars, water, all the water you needed, and your relatives were standing on the thing saying, no, we don't think this boat's going to sink. We think you're crazy for getting in that lifeboat. How long are you going to sit there by the side of that ship as it sinks trying to convince them to get into their own lifeboat and follow you, or if yours is big enough to share it with them? Because eventually what's going to happen, two things. The other people that are jumping ship are going to claw at your lifeboat and tip it over and kill you and your family. Or your family's just going to be ignorant and go down, you know, you're the ones that don't believe you. And that giant ship is going to suck you and your lifeboat under if you don't get far enough away. That's what cities are. Cities are the Titanic, and you're in your little lifeboat. And right now you're tethered to that city for some reason. You're not even in the lifeboat. Or you haven't even put together your spam and your compass. It's real fun. Everybody wants to sit around and talk about what it is to be a patriot and what it is to be a survivalist, hoping that somebody else will come through and have a big plan and a major place to go to. It's not going to happen this time. Every time it happens, it's something different. This is going to be the revolution of the individual heart. And there's going to be a spreading, you know, a separating of the chaff. Goats and the sheep. Sheepdogs and the sheep, let's put it that way. That'll be the new thing, the new vernacular. It's going to be scary. There are so many things that could go wrong in this world. If the American people knew what, even the little bit that I know from working on the inside with FEMA and public safety, knew what a thin line stands between civilization and total chaos, they wouldn't sleep at night. If they knew just how easy it is for even a so-called, quote-unquote, natural disaster, like a biologic, to just come through, how close we've come so many times, even in the last 20 years that I've been involved with public safety, that things almost got pushed past the tipping point and were luckily contained, which I think by the grace of God, not by the wisdom of government, because the government, the only thing they can do well is screw things up. Folks, you've got to stop having this mentality that it's not going to be tomorrow, or that this dispensationalist attitude that, oh, it's got to happen, we're all going to be raptured. And I know a lot of people who secretly believe that. A lot of good people secretly believe that. Let's not interfere with it. Let's let it happen. My goal is to last as long as I can to save as many people as I can. But I'm not going to be able to do that unless I put together my family and my church first. And I want to keep doing these shows. I want to keep reaching out to you guys. It's just getting harder and harder to do when I have to spend time doing the other things. I think what I'll do is it'll end up being me sharing with you what I've done that day, you know, what I put in a bucket that day, what I learned that day, what cool thing I did with my machete. So as we move on in this, and I'm not doing this to chase anybody off. If I burned anybody, good. If I made anybody go, yeah, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about, take a look at yourself. Go look at what your survival gear is. Break out your plan. I bet you don't even have one. Doesn't have to be on paper. But what have you told your family? If this happens, this happens. If we do this, that happens. If they show up and do this, we go. If the water and electricity goes out, we secure these five things first. This is what you do. This is your job. Don't open. It's simple as saying, don't open the refrigerator when the power goes off. Do you even have that? Do you know where the candles are? Do you know where the flashlight is? See, I don't even have extra batteries. I can't afford batteries. Everything we have is wind-up. We fit within our budget what we got to do. You've got some great opportunities, America. You're really wasting this grace period that God has given us to survive. We'll be back after this, and I'll tell you a little. Don't forget, second hour is Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, so it won't all be me being mad. So stick through the next half hour and you get to hear the pastor, unless he comes in and gets mad. We'll be right back on Stronghold Radio.
Well, it's Friday night and he's pulling them over left and right. He sort of looks like Darth Vader with his gun and his radar and his flashing blue light. He drives a government squad car full of all kinds of hardware to handle the angry mob. And with his badge on his shoulder and his gun in his holster, he'll tell you he's just doing his job. Watch out for martial law. When he's out there watching after you, if he's a tool of the bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, an agent straight from Interpol. Watch out for martial law. He's there to prove who owns a muscle and might. And he just might pull you over to the side of the shoulder, cause he cannot see your license plate light. Because he cannot see your license plate light. Ain't it a frightening feeling when you're behind the wheel and you see him there? Or when you're round in the corner and he's right there behind you in your rearview mirror. Is he a foe or a friend or this public defender we see on our TV screen? Or just some vain reckless power gaining strength every hour, a threat to the American dream? Watch out for martial law.
and he's out there watching after you. If he's a tool of the bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, collector of the revenue. Watch out for martial law. And if he's tailing you, you better not run. Just read the news in the papers covering some of his capers. He's dangerous when he's aiming that gun. That boy is dangerous when he's aiming that gun. Time when it seemed like he was part of the dream, when we could count on him. But now he sold his allegiance to those socialist schemers and their every whim. Now I've got nothing against him if he's out defending my country, my Bill of Rights. But if he's out there abusing all those powers he's using, then maybe we should turn off his lights. Watch out for martial law. When he's out there watching after you. If he's a tool of the bankster, he's a badge-wearing gangster, an agent straight from Interpol. Watch out for martial law. He's there to prove who owns a muscle and might. And he just might pull you over to the side of the shoulder, cause he cannot see your license straight light. Watch out for martial law. And if he's tailing you, you better not run. Just read the news in the papers covering some of his capers. He's dangerous when he's waving that gun. I said you better be wary if he's had a bad hair day, because he's dangerous when he's aiming that gun. He can be dangerous when he's aiming that gun. That boy is dangerous when he's aiming that gun.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster,
during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
We're back. We're having a little trouble. Some people cannot listen today. For some reason, they're having trouble. So I'm posting the other feed into my Facebook account so they can do it there. Tune in there, folks. Well, if you can't hear me, I always do that. If you're having trouble tuning in, tune in here. If you're having trouble tuning in, you don't even say that. I am Dutch Jones. This is Stronghold Radio, and we're coming to you from Camp Cahuilla. I get the hiccups from eating popcorn. Camp Cahuilla, California. We come to you Monday through Friday when we can, giving you a militant Christian, anti-New World Order worldview. Try to share a little bit of gospel with you, but mostly we try and motivate you to serve the Lord in a way that 99% of the freak churches out there won't do. They just don't want to teach people this. I get people that come to our trainings, they're like, wow, you know, thanks for inviting us. I wish our church would do this. And I always say, well, invite me in. One church invited me in. I spoke, and we haven't heard from him since. I think I scared him that daily. Remember that? What was that church? Crossroads Baptist? What was the name of that church? I had more people come to this meeting to talk about survival stuff, preparedness, than go to my entire church on a Sunday. And got up and spoke to them, and they're like, oh, great, thank you. They didn't have any questions or anything, but I just
And I didn't hit him with... I hit him with a two-percenter. Two-percenter of what they needed to know. I dealt with just natural disasters. And Gateway Baptist Church in Visalia, California. There's a couple people that go there that that come up here, and they kind of told me, hey, you need to go down there. Another guy last weekend wants me to come to his church. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. We'll all be run away, and, you know, they'll be screaming at us, and, oh, you're not being a good Christian by teaching these things. And then when calamity falls and they're watching their kids wither away because there isn't a single thing to eat, or their children are being taken by the New World Order, or their daughters are being raped by scumbag motorcycle gangs that are going to just take over when they get the chance, and they don't have a gun because they never thought they needed one. That's for other people, not them. We always want somebody else to protect us, don't we? I get so mad. We had a local Visalia soldier, Marine, I don't know what it is, young man that went into it with his eyes, you know, wide open, thinking he was serving this country, got killed in Afghanistan yesterday, and everybody's talking about what a hero he is and everything, and I will not besmirch him that. But everybody wants somebody else to go fight their wars, even if they're unjust and they don't understand what they are. And it's the same thing with this preparedness thing. You got to be looking at basic stuff, folks. I'm going to try and get off my pedestal here and get back to actually doing something that may help you. You don't need $1 billion to get this right. You need a chunk somewhere of land. You've got to negotiate some land outside the city. Buy it, trade for it, agree to work there for free if you can have a corner of the world to put your family on. Build a 12 by 12 shed. Buy a dry creek shed. Don't get one of those metal sheds. Get a wooden shed. Insulate it, build it up, reinforce it, stick a solar panel on it. Stick a solar panel on it, throw some boat batteries in there, and start there. Even I can afford to go buy some plywood and 2x4s and cinder blocks and take Stacy and Lou with me and a cheap, inexpensive saw that I can get at Harbor Freight. I don't care if it's from China. We're at war here, folks. And build a 12 by 12 foot shed that will sleep 4 to 5 people in a disaster situation or in an emergency. Then you get yourself a little wooden stove or whatever wooden stove you can do. You install that wooden stove after you get your solar power, because I don't even want solar power. To be honest with you, I could care less if I have electricity. This country is more addicted to electricity than heroin. I don't need it. I needed to do this radio show, but let me tell you something. When I'm worried about feeding my family every day, this radio show's done. There will come a time in the recovery when we'll have to generate our own electricity and reach out to people to let them know where civilization is. Yeah. But boots on the ground stuff, I don't care if I have electricity. So you're going to need a stove to cook, heat, boil water. Start doing some research. Have a way to dispose of your waste, even if you're burning it. You're going to need water. You're going to have to find a location that's got some water to it. And if you can't get it out of a spring or get it in a bucket out of a river, get a hand pump and pump it somehow. Don't rely on electricity to get your water out of the ground. Get a hand pump. Put in a cistern. People up until the last 75 years lived without any of these addictions. Why now, after just 70 years of being addicted to all this garbage? The Tennessee Valley electrical program, all that happened in the 1930s. So 70, 80 years. For 80 years, they got us addicted to centralized plumbing, centralized electricity, paved roads, and look what they were doing with it. You need a cabin in the hills. You don't need a second home or vacation home. And if you've already got a pop-up trailer or a Winnebago, you're set. Just find a place to put it. Start putting some infrastructure in there so it'll last longer. Insulate this little plywood 12 by 12 hut. Dig out a root cellar underneath it. Utilize the resources around you. And start doing it. Start doing it, folks. Get your family used to living like this. Now, we're real close. We are real close, especially the three of us. Anthea's got a long way to go, but she's only with us, unfortunately, 4 days a month. If we're lucky, usually 2 days a month. That's why I'm really striving to keep her here over the summer, so she'll get to absorb through osmosis this lifestyle. I can live out of the back of a car if I have to. But why do that? Why risk that? Why risk living out of your front pocket little survival can when you can take the grace period that God has given us now and squeeze out every penny you have to make a place for your family? If you you've got to look at where you're standing right now and say, can I survive here indefinitely? And if the answer is anything but a strong, resounding yes, you've got to figure out how to get out of there. So get this little 12 by 12 cabin. The reason I say 12 by 12 is a lot of, and I'm not going to care about this, but a lot of places, that's the standard. If you build anything over 12 by 12, you need permits. You need inspectors. And that's where the prices go up. You go buy the 2 by 4s that you need for the environment you're in. If you need treated 2 by 4s, you buy 5 of them a week. You buy 5 a month, and you stash them somewhere until you have enough to build the structure. Don't start building the structure and then stop. Get all your materials together. It's kind of like what happened with Solomon's temple. He got the materials together before he built it. He didn't say, okay, we're going to do one pillar at a time. That's all we can afford. He waited. People donated different types of wood and marble and steel, or not steel, metals. Get all of them. Figure out what you need. Go to Popular Mechanics. Go to any one of these places and get plans for a 12 by 12 shed and overbuild it. Buy a little each month. I don't know how much time we have, but you've got to start. And then when you've got the materials you need, you go up there and you spend a couple weekends and you get it done in a month so that you can sleep in it. Go up there in a tent until you get it done on this chunk of land that you've prearranged. Study. You've got so many resources at your disposal. There's got to be some old guy that you can pick his brain and say, how do I make a roof not leak? For 6,000 years, people have been figuring this stuff out. And now in the last 80 to 90 years, we've suddenly gone retarded, and we can't build these things? It's sad how much knowledge we have lost, especially in America. Get some trailers. IC Freedom. Get some trailers together and hook them together. Start collecting firewood for your stove. You can get a stove from cheaper than dirt. Well, we can get... We sell stoves. We can get a stove. I think they're $100 for a little stove. You just need something to get started. Don't be overwhelmed by this. Get your firewood, start collecting it. If you can't do anything else, go up there on weekends and start collecting firewood and put it someplace where it can be covered so you'll have it when you're there. If nothing else, you'll have firewood. If you're going to live out of a tent, you'll have firewood. Cover it, keep it where you can find it if you're in a heavy snow area. Orland says, dig an extra hole when code enforcement arrives. No kidding. That's why I kind of chuckled, like, I'm not going to mess with code enforcement. You only need code enforcement if you're going to hook up utilities. They'll show up and just say, hey, that's a tool shed. Well, you can't do that. We're going to put a lien on it. Go ahead, put a lien on it. I'm never going to sell it again. You know? People are so afraid of the government, it keeps them from acting. It keeps them from doing what's right for their family. After you've built the main structure, build an outbuilding. Build a shed for your tools, for your gardening equipment. Start a small garden. Not in the city. Stop doing the city stuff. It's a waste of your time. It's only going to be something that somebody's going to use to live a little bit in the city, because after they kill you, till somebody kills them, until the resources are wasted in your apartment. Do you understand what I just said? Look at Kosovo. Until somebody bigger and stronger comes along and takes it from you, and then somebody bigger and stronger takes from them, or until the resources are used up by whichever scumbags got it. And if you have resources right now and you're investing in the stock market and in all these things, shame on you. You should be investing in your children's future, a means of production. Build a rabbit hutch. Start figuring out how you're going to raise, feed, train chickens and train. Butcher. Train your rabbits. Chickens and rabbits, basic food source. Find a place near where you can fish with a net or fish with poles. Yeah, fish netting is illegal. Who cares? Scotty38, who always gets it, says, and I'm just going to read it because I 2 Timothy 4:4, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned into fables. Yeah. If you don't listen to what's coming down, it's not me that's telling you this. It's God using folks like me. Why are there so many Patriot networks now? Why are there so many survivalist shows and websites? Don't you think God is behind that? He's trying to wake his people up. But you're going to become like a fable. You're going to become a distant memory. Hey, remember that one guy? Yeah, he stored all those MREs in his garage. I wonder what happened. Let's go check. Wow, his whole house is gone. There's skeletons in the backyard. Somebody took his MREs. He had to sleep. Didn't train his wife and kids how to fight, did he? Didn't listen and stayed in the city. Those of you that are metropolitanized, that think that that's, oh, we have to stay where the culture and society is, we'll find a way. You will not find a way. Because guess what? For every one of us, there's at least 10 to 20 of them. And their whole goal is to eat you alive to make sure that they can move on to eat the next person alive. That's their whole plan. So you've got this place, you've got a cabin, you've got some outbuildings. You start looking at a garden. This is all stuff you can do within 6 months to a year.
But what if it doesn't happen? I'm going to look really stupid.
No, you'll have a retreat for anything that comes down the line. We don't know God's time. But what we do know is that these things run in cycles, even if it's not the end of the world. As we know it, we're headed for a financial collapse. It's going to be at least as long as the last Great Depression in the 1930s. And then they'll start a world war to get us out of it. And you want to be living through all that? You need to go find some 80-year-old folks that lived through the Depression and start asking them how they survived. Because they're here today because of things they did. They either struggled and scratched and clawed and watched their friends die, watched their children get sick and die, and they survived just by sheer luck or the generosity of others, or they got out of Dodge. And who survived the most in the Great Depression? Rural areas. One, they stuck together because they were good people. Two, they had a means of production and food. They didn't have to sell it to anybody. They could eat it amongst themselves and trade it for labor or whatever. Look at the old pictures of the 1930s. Look at the soup lines. It's amazing. Look at the Hoovervilles. Go watch Grapes of Wrath. You want to live like that again? Well, it says we're in a world war right now. Yeah, except you don't know until afterwards that it's a world war. They still need to, I think they need to get 3 or 4 more countries involved. Yay, Libya. Is everything okay over there, Lou? Folks, I'm here to tell you that this stuff is going on today, and you have to do what you can today. Don't wait for somebody else to come and ring a bell. There's not going to be a Paul Revere. You've already heard it. There have been Paul Reveres for the last 2 decades telling you about this stuff. Putting together the pieces should have already been done. Now you should, if you were in the right situation, you'd be just taking inventories. If you're not sitting back taking inventories right now of your stronghold, you're behind the eight ball. And even then, there's still more work to go. Don't get fat and happy and sit down and go, well, I've got my seeds, I got my MREs, I got 50,000 rounds of 223. I don't need nothing. No, there's always more to be done. Strengthen, reach out, build up. Do whatever it is you can do to ensure that your family survives. And being in the cities is not the answer, folks. And the answer is not necessarily going out and spending everything you have on a chunk of land somewhere. You got to do the research. You got to figure out where you need to be and where it is others like you are going to be. We're in a period of grace, and I don't really know the time frame. Like I said, these people that sent me emails that said, oh, God's going to come in and rescue us, and you shouldn't be talking so glim and glum. I'm like, oh, really? You know exactly how God's going to handle this? Neither do I. But how would you feel sitting in a FEMA camp, looking at the guard tower, staring at that machine gunner up there, telling your kids, I'm sorry, all there is to eat are these wafers and crackers they gave you because you didn't have the wherewithal, the wisdom, the basic intelligence to get them out of the cities and move them to a place where they could at least have a fighting chance? Is that the legacy you want to leave your kids? So you establish a structure somewhere. You come up with a means of production for food. You work on the next thing is you got to work on a counter economy. You've got to come up with people. You can't just go up there and do it alone. You go do it on a mountaintop alone. So you grow the greatest alfalfa in the world on your field. You can't eat alfalfa. Okay, well, I'm going to feed it to my animals. Well, there's always going to be a need for trade. There's always going to be a need for fellowship. So you've got to find the place where these people are and come up ahead of time with these pre-established designations for what currency is going to be, who you're going to trade with, how you'll transport it. Because I'm here to tell you that if you have a big family, let's say you had a huge family, you're one of these guys that listen to God, you've got 7 or 8 kids, you can distribute the labor, you can do everything, you get your own little commune in a good way. Not a communist commune, but a little collective. I don't even know what every time I use a term, people get mad at me. You said commune. You've got a group of people. You're honoring God, you're worshiping God, you get up every morning and you do what you got to do. There'll be a certain level of degeneration. Just because you're going to need an influx of goods. Even the American farmers that came out here into America, What followed the pioneers? First came out the fur traders, and then everybody hated it when the ranchers came out and took everything over, and then you had the farmers. There were always these wars back and forth. But every one of them had to have an outside source either to send their goods to or to get new materials from. The trains followed everybody. So, and I'm not talking on a national scale because I don't believe that's going to happen. That's my belief. I don't think there's going to be a national recovery. It's going to be localized. So you have to have some place to send your goods to. So you've got to be thinking about that right now. When they isolate these cities, when they put a cordon around them, they're not going to be getting anything in or out, period. So if you're in a small town, a small community that you've picked, that you like the people there, you're going to have to come up with a post-collapse economy of your own. You're going to have to decide, hey, we like shiny rocks of this type. We like this coin. We like that. Whatever it is, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You've got to figure it out for yourselves, and you've all got to agree upon it and have a covenant on that. It's going to be like when you look at the Mayflower Compact. Before they landed on shore, they worked these things out. They didn't just leave it up to happenstance, go, oh, well, everything's going to be great. Let's just leave it in God's hands. No. And they failed. And they restructured it. They worked it as they went, and they figured it out. So, folks, there's just too many chances that people are taking right now, too many things people are doing. That's just, and, yeah, I'm getting a little angry about it because I keep getting these emails. Oh, well, what do I do? What video do I watch? Everybody wants a quick fix. I can't take 20 years of wilderness survival, military training, all that, and just take a funnel and cram it in your head. It's got to be a day-to-day thing. You've got to find people like me in your community, or if you're close to us, come up and see if you fit in here and work side by side. Put an investment into it. That's the only way it's going to work. Just showing up someplace isn't the answer. And waiting until your beans and weenies run out in L.A. is not the answer. I got good people that I love that I talk to. My own brother, he's just like, well, I'll just store up a bunch of food and wait it out all alone, just me and my kids. You can't do that. Even if he took my advice, he got out of the city, he got to the next level, but he stopped. And if you're listening, I pray for you every day, Dan, that you realize that the next level is to have faith in God, find godly people, and fellowship with them and build a community. You can't just go take your 4 acres of land, dig a well, and hope you can live on pine needles when the MREs, fall out and you're done. Because it's not just about survival. That's animalistic. If it were just about survival, I'd tell you to go barbaric and just kill and eat what you can until something bigger along comes and eats you. We're humans. We're made in God's image. We're supposed to live a different way. We're called to live in small societies. We're not called to go live alone. So, folks, as I'm getting close to winding down here, my 2-liter bottle's not keeping me cold anymore. I think I'm going to move it to the front. You've got to do more than just listen to this show. You've got to do more than sit in your basement. And really, you got to even do more than just sit back and count how many bullets you have and how many MREs you have. It's not enough. If you're, like I said, if you're looking out the window and the only thing you see is another guy looking out a window back at you in the apartment across the street, you're starting from a zero sum. And I think in this coming collapse, that's not going to be enough for you to survive. Maybe as an individual, you figure, well, I can wait till the last minute and bug out. But if you've got a family, that's just poor. That's just a sad, sad, sad plan. So we're going to play some music right now because we're going to do a transition over to 93.3 FM. Pastor's sitting next to me. There will be a show. Practical Christianity coming up at the top of the hour. Those of you tuning in, I especially thank Indiana Freedom Talk Radio. I see that we're on in upstate New York there on the AM 11 meter band. We appreciate that. And everyone else that's listening to Stronghold Radio, just stay tuned. Lou's cranking up some radios here. I kind of surprised them, but we take a little buffer here so that the stations that tune in just for the pastor's message. And hey, that doesn't hurt my feelings. If you're going to listen to anything, listen to him. So we'll be right back on Stronghold Radio in just about 6 minutes. And until then, enjoy the music. We'll be right back with the pastor.
Through she's been made to suffer for the profit of a few. Storm clouds are forming, winds of change now touch our shores. I hear forefathers are crying as a dream's been crucified. America, I'll show my love for thee with strength and loyalty. America, America, I'll show my love for you and all that I do. Friends and family, mourning in their ignorance, while staying safe within a dream. I will fight for freedom and raise liberty. For my country, slay corporate dynasties, America. Now show my love for thee with strength and loyalty. America, America. Now show. Set you back up on your feet. After all I've fled, no one's left. I will always be there. I'll be there by your side, and I'll never let you down. I cry for my people in this time of tragedy. Just want some answers so the truth will set us free. And the truth will set us free. I say
it's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And
We are the sons, yes, we are the sons of liberty. Pay the price they're asking for, it's always pay the tyrant's fee. Never give up the struggle, boys, fight for the liberty tree. It's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And we are the sons, yes, we are the sons of liberty. Stand for the rights of man, boys, stand against all tyranny. Hang the lance of freedom, boys, high on the liberty tree. It's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And we are the sons, yes, we are the sons of liberty. It will grow as we grow, boys, it will be as strong as we. We must cling to our faith, boys, faith in the liberty tree. It's a tall old tree and a strong old tree. And we are the sons, yes, we are the sons of liberty.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
If you're in the battle for the Lord and right, just keep on the fight and right. If you win the battle, surely you must fight, so keep on the fight and right. Brother, keep on the fight and right. Keep on.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Cahuilla, California, the church at Cahuilla in Central California. It is Thursday. Did you bring us up on over there? We are on 93.3 FM, Vicegerent Radio, as well as streaming on the internet from DutchJones.info, and we're also on several media outlets. Thank you so much for tuning in, Liberty Tree Radio, Indiana Freedom Talk Radio. We got to come up with a name for that 11-meter frequency out there in upstate New York. Scotty 38 is streaming us in his local community and all the other places. And welcome, pod people listening. It is the 22nd of, am I right on that? I'm looking at a very little calendar. 23rd of June 2011. It is 6:03 p.m. Thursday, which means it's time for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. Welcome, Pastor, on this hot June day.
Thank you, Dutch and Lou. Welcome to everybody. Welcome. It's good to be here today, folks. And I think we're going down the same line Dutch was going down, but jump on, and we're going to look at some scriptures here, and hopefully it'll be very edifying and challenging to you today.
Okay.
So here we go, folks. If you have your Bibles, we're going to start in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 3. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 3. There's a story. If you haven't seen the book, or excuse me, seen the movie about the life of Peter Marshall, a man called Peter, based on the true story of Peter Marshall. He was a U.S. Senate chaplain around the 1940s, and they made a movie on his life. I highly recommend it. It's a good Christian movie called A Man Called Peter. But the fascinating thing that I want to bring out, folks, is he's speaking to the military academy. What's the famous military? The Army. West Point. Thank you, brother. Mm-hmm. He was speaking to the West Point cadets on a Sunday morning, and the place is crowded, and he spoke on the message of death comes suddenly. Oh. And when he got done with the message, he was in the rectory there, and the man, the head of the school, came to him and said, Brother Marshall, and it was a very heavy message, and Peter was just shaking his head. You'll see it in the movie there. And he says, I'm sorry, brother, I don't know. I had to preach that message on death. Be ready for death. Death comes suddenly. And the man said, it was wonderful. The head of the college said, oh, brother, it was a great message. Well, it happened to be the day that Peter felt constrained to preach on this message, be ready for death, death comes suddenly, was November 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So he was speaking.
Oh, December 7th.
December 7th, thanks,
okay,
brother.
Yeah.
December 7th, 1941. So he was speaking the very morning that Pearl Harbor was getting bombed and all these young men were going to be going into harm's way in just a short message, in just a short time. You see, and he didn't want to speak, of all the thoughts he could speak on, but God had just impressed him. Folks, I can't say that I'm in the same position as Peter Marsh, but I feel impressed to give you the message that I'm going to give you today, because I believe God is working the same way. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever, Hebrews 13:8. And so that's the message I'm going down, is because I feel the Lord would have us do so. So Proverbs 22, verse 3 says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." You need to have this. This is a principle in the book of Proverbs and the Word of God. A prudent man, he foresees the evil. He sees there's a problem up ahead, and he hides himself. The Hebrew word there, it's a covering. But the simple pass on, and they're punished. Oh, no. You know, everything's the same as it's always been. It'll work out, whatever. You know, the government will take care of me. The king will take care of me. And in a fascinating aspect of Scripture is, most of you are aware, when Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee," that double affirmative, "verily, verily," is a powerful statement by Jesus. Whenever he says "verily, verily," it means stand up, pay attention, you know, check it out, listen to me. Those of you that have ears to hear. Right. Well, Proverbs does the same thing here with this verse on a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, the simple pass on and are punished, in that it repeats it in Proverbs chapter 27. And verse 12, it says the very same thing. So here, folks, we have a "verily, verily." A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished.
So it must be important if it's twice.
It's twice. It's a "verily, verily" there. In Webster's 1828, he defines the word here as "hide." He says, signified originally a station, a covered place, and listen to this, or a place of refuge for besiegers against the attacks of the besieged, a place of refuge for besiegers against the attacks of the besieged. It's a stronghold. It's a place of covering. It's a covert. It's a stealth movement that you are engaged in because there's evil out in front of you. And I want to show you in Scripture a place where this played out in the book of Judges. In the book of Judges, chapter 5, we're going to see how. An interesting, very interesting verse here. I love the Word of God. I trust you do too, folks. There is so much in here for our life and our liberty in the Word of God. In Judges 5, and we'll begin reading in verse 6. Judges 5 and verse 6. It says, "In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied, and travelers walked through byways or crooked ways." So most people, if you where you live, you have a major highway, you have a major thoroughfare. But in times of trouble, in times of economic collapse, in times of warfare, you're unable to travel the direct route, and you have to take a more circuitous route because of the danger. If you're taking the direct route, you're probably going to get mugged, you're going to get stopped, you're going to get pillaged, raped and pillaged. And so in the days of Shamgar, this judge, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied because there was a time of war and the people were being persecuted, and so they had to walk on the byways, taking back routes, if you would, the long way to get to where they wanted to go, because nobody wanted to take the major route because you're going to be mugged or you're going to be accosted by the enemy
tactical
soldiers.
Movement.
So it was a tactical movement is taking place here in Judges chapter 5 and verse 6. So the travelers walked through the byways. It says, "The inhabitants of the village ceased. They ceased in Israel until that I, Deborah, arose, that I arose a mother in Israel." What does it mean when the inhabitants of the village ceased? In a time of warfare, in a time of when you're besieged and when you're taken over by an enemy, if you're in a in the Old Testament times, if you're in an outlying village and you were overrun by the enemy, if you weren't up in the mountains, if you were just in a village, see, people lived outside the big cities and they farmed out there, a lot of the poor people. But if the city was being besieged or was a time of war, they would come into the city to find protection. Yeah. And so she says, this is the way it was. People just, they'd emptied the little villages, unless you're up in the hill country or the mountain country or something like that. And she said, this is where it was. People could not go and function on a normal basis. And then it says in verse 8, "They chose new gods. Then was there war in the gates." That's the seat of government. There's war in the seat of government because the people had rejected God. Mm-hmm. And they're being punished. And she asked the question, "Was there a shield or spear seen among 40,000 in Israel?" And you see the principle. It says when the Philistines conquered the Israelites at one point, it said that they took away all their weapons, and the children of Israel had to go to the Philistines to get their axes and their goads sharpened.
Blacksmiths.
Yeah, no blacksmiths. So there's no blacksmiths in Israel. So this is what happens. This is what you see when your senators, your congressmen, your president, whatever, people are moving to take away your gun rights. This is why, is because you have no way of resistance. And so the scriptural principle here is the wisdom, the prudent foresee the evil, but the wicked pass on and they're punished. The foolish people is in the days of Shamgar, the days of Jael, they were having to walk in circuitous routes because of the evil that was before them. Now I want to go to Genesis chapter 41, Genesis chapter 41, and speak to you for a little bit from the book of Genesis. This is at the time of the great famine in Egypt. You've had 7 years of plenty. Joseph is at the head, and then you have 7 years of famine. And the people prepared, Joseph and the Egyptians, at least the heads of Egypt, they prepared for 7 years in this time of plenty. And Dutch, it reminds me of today. We've had in Genesis 41 and verse 57 is where we're going to be going. We'll actually begin reading verse 53 of Genesis 41. We'll begin reading verse 53. Dutch, it reminds me of today. We've had a lot of plenty. We've had a lot of blessing. God has been blessing people, not so that they could go out and get a ski boat, and there's nothing wrong with the ski boat, not so that they could go out and get a plasma TV, and there's nothing wrong with the plasma TV, so that they could prepare for the day of calamity that's coming upon. And so we've had these days of blessing, and now you folks, you're having the time of warning for preparation, and perhaps it's the last days and months of warning for your time to prepare. And so in Genesis 41 and verse 53, it says, "And the 7 years of plenteous that was in the land of Egypt ended." And we don't know, folks, but the days of our plenteous in America could be ending quickly. "And the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt was there bread." Egypt had bread because God supernaturally spoke to Joseph, and Pharaoh listened through the dream that Pharaoh had, and he said, "Okay, Joseph, whatever you want to do, prepare, prepare for the days." "And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, and what he saith to do." Yeah. See, the people did not prepare. This is one of the parts, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, probably, Dutch. It amazes me. The prophet came on the scene, said, "You're going to have 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine." Pharaoh believed, the pagan Pharaoh believed Joseph, but the average person in Egypt
blew it off.
And so we're going to find out here, the text says, within a year, they were already beginning to starve. They had no preparations. It just blows your mind. So they're crying to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said, "Go to Joseph, and what he says, do." And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened up all the storehouse. By the way, the face of the earth there, that's the land, the known world. Mm-hmm. And Joseph opened up all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. So you have to be prepared, folks. If you haven't prepared, you're going to have to buy food at a very high price, but soon, as we find out, even that is not going to help you. Your money's going to run out, then you're going to sell whatever you have, your cars, your land, and eventually they sold their property, still trying to survive, and all their cattle. It says, "And all countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because the famine was so sore in all the lands." What corn becomes here, what food becomes, folks, is a tool of dominion. God was pleased with Joseph. He was prospering Egypt in a tremendous way, and so Egypt then becomes a dominant, it was already a dominant force, but it became even a greater dominant force. So food, folks, is a tool of dominion. Please understand that. God wants us to have food so we don't have to ask of the government, we don't have to ask of Pharaoh, so that the non-Christians will come to us, and we begin to be the head rather than the tail, and we begin to be dominion-oriented and be the one who is chief in the marketplaces. Right now, throughout America, we are the off-scouring of the world, of the United States. The Christians, generally speaking, are maligned. They're ridiculed. Dutch and I know as we go into the town hall meetings, we're outnumbered there, 20, 30 to 1, whatever the case may be. And so, and we're looked upon as fanatics and kooks. But there will come a day when the dominion will be reversed, and they will be coming to those who have prepared, and God wants it that way so that he can extend his glory, and all will see the salvation of the Lord. Henry Morris, in his commentary on Genesis 57 here, on Genesis 41, verse 57, he says this, "Advocates of welfareism may wonder why Joseph did not simply give the food to the people." In other words, they had those great storehouses. Why didn't he just give the food to the people instead of making them buy it? Joseph instead maintained strict control over the supplies in order to prevent looting and waste. knowing that even the vast supplies that had been accumulated would have to be carefully husbanded out to last through 7 long years of famine. Mm-hmm. We don't know how much difficulty is coming on to the United States, but it's going to take a while. We know that, and you're going to have to be careful how you use your what you've stored. He then sold for them a reasonable price and on an equitable basis to all that were in need of grain. And here's the point he makes here. Had it been given away, it would have rewarded indolence and short-sightedness. Yeah. Now, Dutch and I have been discussing this. You know, we've been discussing this at the church at Kuia, how we're going to deal with those that come and ask for, you know, ask of alms, ask of bread, ask of help. But we have to be careful here that we don't reward indolence, that is plain laziness and inactivity and short-sightedness. God wants Christians to be perceptive, to foresee. That's why we quoted Proverbs 22 to you there. The prudent man foresees the evil day. He foresees it out in the future. Had it been given away, it would have rewarded indolence and short-sightedness. And Dutch, I was talking to a pastor friend of ours out in Missouri just recently, and he said, Warren, I'm not sending out near the newsletters that I used to. He says, because if the Christians can't see what's coming on, America today says, I've just basically given up. I'm doing what I'm doing out here in Missouri, and I'm preparing. We're doing all that we can do. But he says, the day of my warning, he says, God's just taking the burden off of me.
It's exactly how my first hour of the show went. I was just like, there's a certain time when the door gets shut.
Yeah, and the burden's lifted. Yeah. Right now, folks, the burden's still on me as a pastor. I still feel the burden of warning, but I actually sense, though, Dutch, that I can see the day coming where the burden will be lifted.
Narrowing.
Yeah, narrowing. And so, but right now, folks, the burden's on me, and so I'm sharing it with you the best as I can. Unfortunately, the people themselves could not be relied on. This is, now I'm going back to Henry Morrison's commentary on verse 57. Unfortunately, the people themselves could not be relied on to store up for the coming years of famine. Folks, we can't rely upon others because we need to do it ourselves. Human nature being what it is, most people will spend all they earn and more for their immediate needs, both real and imagined. Yes. The few individuals who would indeed save for the future would be tempted to profiteer when opportunity came. Besides, the need was going to be so great that nothing less than a centrally administered plan could really be effective on a national basis. So I think we are going to see, we're going to look at this a little bit more. There was a national plan, and it saved the people of Egypt. But the point is, Dutch, is I don't want to be a part of that national plan.
No. Yeah, I don't want to be dependent upon it. No.
Yeah, I don't want to be, folks, we as Christians, we don't want to be dependent upon that national plan. Now, God may be working in the halls of Congress and in government in some way to preserve life, but I'd rather preserve it with my own self-governance and my own foresightedness, which Proverbs admonishes me to do. Just like Proverbs says, go to the ant, thou sluggard, and see your ways, how she prepares for winter.
Sure.
Folks, so that's what we're doing. Now, so charging a fair price for Joseph was for the surplus grain that people came to him for was a tool of dominion for Egypt. I just want you to see that, folks. So, and have we not, and so many others, warned the people over and over again that the day of calamity is coming, and folks, you know, we need to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to skip over to Genesis chapter 47. Genesis chapter 47, I'm going to begin reading in verse 13. The rest of the chapters is Joseph introducing, you know, he finds his brothers, and they have their relationship restored and all that. So I'm not going there today for what we're doing. So I'm going to pick up reading in verse 13 of Genesis 47. This is still that seven-year period of famine. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, I was just looking at some pictures, I think it was today, Dutch, of the great Ukrainian famine, what Russia produced, and it was about five or six boys in a picture, their distended stomachs, the gaunt faces, the eye sockets, bulging. Folks, we may be seeing those sites, you know, in one day fairly soon. And it wouldn't take long.
No.
It wouldn't take long in America to see that again, all right? So people fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So they're having to go. Joseph, and as you know the story, Joseph and his Jacob and his family, they sell their money, and they get food from Egypt because they're having to go to Egypt as well. Now, verse 15, it says, and when the money failed in the land of Egypt, and folks, there will come a time when perhaps even our gold and silver may fail us in this sense, that just to buy a loaf of bread will take up all your gold.
Because there's no bread.
Because there's virtually no bread, yeah. And there's judgments in the Old Testament when Israel, it said that, you know, It cost money just for dove's dung. I don't know what, you know, to be so starving that you'd even eat dove's dung. That's how starving you are, and you could actually have to pay for it. But that's what it says a couple times in the text when cities are being besieged, and, you know, it just, starvation is rampant. And so it says, and when the money failed in the land of Egypt and when the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence, for the money faileth. So they ran out of money. They were buying food because they didn't prepare. And then there comes a point where even their money fails them. And Joseph said, okay, I'll give you some food. Give me your cattle, and I will give for your cattle if money fail. And folks, this is the tool of dominion I was talking about. If you even have just a little bit, there will be people that would say, they may say to you, here is my Hummer, my Hummer three or Hummer two, and say, I don't have any gas, I don't have any fuel, it's useless to me.
My kids are starving,
here it is. Here's a picture of a, you know, here's my, I actually have a Rembrandt, you know, and it's doing me no good. Mm-hmm. Give me, Rembrandt
for
a sack of potatoes. Yeah. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we could be in a position. And what does this mean? This means it's a tool of dominion. God's not wanting you to get filthy rich just to get rich, so that you can share the gospel, share with them a tract. And remember, as we're exhorting you to be prepared, it's good to have Christian tracts on hand so that you can minister the love of Jesus Christ and the plan of salvation.
Maybe a lot of Bibles, little military Bibles that we have.
And so people will ask you, why is it that you prepared when you're giving them they're giving you a Humvee
for jerky,
and you're taking you're giving them some jerky or a sack of potatoes, and saying, well, how did you know? Say, because I had a Bible, and God instructs Christians what to do. And the Bible tells us to foresee evil, the evil day, and look for these things. And therefore, here, have this tract on This Was Your Life, or Holy Joe, or whatever tract, your Demon's Nightmare from Chick Publications, whatever you like to give them. And you have that on hand, and say, my Bible prepared me. Christians should have been prepared, because the Bible tells us to be prepared.
Right.
You know. And so this is what's going on here. It says that, he says, give me your cattle, and I will give you. So now they're giving their horses and their donkeys and their camels, whatever it is, whatever kind of animal husbandry. And by the way, animal husbandry will be very important, you know. So folks, I appreciate those that are getting skills in animal husbandry, knowing how to do
farriers,
pack mule, all that kind of stuff is a great skill to learn. You know, I just listened to Glenn Beck the other day, Dutch, and this was just like 2 days ago. And he was having a question and answer with some college kids, and they were talking about how all these college students have degrees and they can't get jobs.
Yeah.
And so this college student said, Glenn, Beck, what do you recommend that a college student should major in? We're having trouble getting jobs. And Glenn Beck said, I recommend, number one, you major in farming.
Agriculture.
Yep. Isn't that interesting? The production of food is what Glenn Beck told this college student on national TV. Major in agriculture and the production of food. Isn't that, boy, that's very interesting. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So verse 16, and Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses. See that? Horse is worth a lot more than some bread, but that's what they got. Bread in exchange for horses, and for the flocks, and for the cattle of the herds, and for the asses. And he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. I think I find it fascinating here that Joseph had the ability to feed all these animals because he had stored and he had prepared.
All the granaries were filled.
Yeah. When we think back now to these 7 years of plenty, once again, folks, and all the incredible storage facilities that Joseph had built, and see, everywhere there was a city, there was a storage granary, and people could see it was actually providing jobs. It was a lucrative time. Everybody had work, folks, because Joseph was building storage granaries everywhere. It was like, you know, if we put the people to work through building bridges and repairing our infrastructure. So these people knew what they were building. Oh, it's a grain storage for the 7 years of famine.
The knowledge was there.
Right. There's no excuse. We just can't be forking out what little that we have to those that come pleading because their day of opportunity passed. We'll give that message to Dutch here one day.
Yes.
So Joseph is buying animals, and remember, animals eat and eat and eat, especially horses. They just can't eat the bare minimum or they die. He must have known he had tremendous surplus for this day. It's just amazing. Verse 18, when that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, we will not... Now look, when the first year ended, they came... In the second year, they're already starving to death. In the first year, they're already starving to death because they didn't prepare at all. And there's people in their houses that aren't going to last 30 days, 60 days, and they're going to be starving. It's just...
3 days.
Yeah, 3 days. It blows my mind, folks. Absolutely blows my mind. So in the second year they came unto him, we will not hide it from my lord how that our money is spent. My lord also hath herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our lands. Our bodies and our lands. It seems as though the text should say the fourth year. I'm amazed at how many people do not store up for that rainy day. I agree that it may have been more difficult back then because they were poor and they lived more hand-to-mouth, but still, to not even make it a year when you knew this time was coming. Hmm. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land, buy us, he says, buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate.
Oh,
give
please just seed. Feed us. We'll be slaves. Just feed us.
Yeah, just feed us. And of course, again, see, folks, here's the point. The point is food is a tool of dominion.
Huge
and we
weapon.
Don't want to be a pawn in the hands of the New World Order because we don't have any food.
Right.
They'll have a dominion over us. You know, seeds, they need up seeds. Store up seeds and grain, folks, especially non-hybridized seed. I'm not going to go on that because...
That's a whole other show.
Dutch has dealt, you've dealt with that before. So, and Joseph bought all the land of Egypt, so they sold their land just for food, just to live a few more months, a few more years. For the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them, and so the land became Pharaoh's. Now, folks, I'm going to emphasize this one time. I don't want to be too overly redundant here. Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field. They had been warned for 7 years. They saw the granaries being built. And I know a man up in the Midwest, he had a survival program, Dutch, 2 years ago. And he said he gave it up. He's a former CHP officer. I can't think of his name, in the Heartland. I think that was his thing. His radio show was called Heartland, something Heartland. He says, I've done it. I've given the call of warning, and now I'm stopping. All across the country, folks have given the clarion call, prepare, get ready, prepare, get ready. And God deals with us differently. Like I said, the burden hasn't been lifted from Dutch, hasn't been lifted from me right now. But the burden is being lifted from other men who have prepared, like my pastor friend in Missouri. He felt the burden had been lifted now, and now he's doing what he's doing with his congregation.
Fortifying what you have.
Yeah, fortifying what he had, yeah. So there'll come a time because the word is, folks, the word's been on every side in America to prepare.
There's so much out there now, there's no way that you can't tell.
Yeah. You know, survival blogspot, there may come a day when he just ends, stops.
Yeah, just says, I don't have the time.
He doesn't have the time. So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field because the famine prevailed over them, so the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, now, folks, I hope if you have your Bible, if you don't have your Bible, look at this in Genesis 47, verse 21. And as for the people, he removed them, those people that needed help, to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even into the other. He removed them to the cities. Oh, my. Oh, my. The cities. Why? Because this is the cities were where the granaries were. But, folks, I want you to know right now, by God's grace, this is precisely where Dutch and I, this is where we don't want to go. This
right.
is by God's grace. We're hoping to avoid the city at all costs. I don't want to have to go, folks, to the city
to get
for food,
anything.
To
Nothing.
Get anything. I don't want to rely upon the hand of civil government for anything. It's in the city where, yeah, you might get some food, but it's also where you're going to be controlled. Your thinking's going to be controlled. Your children's food and what comes into their mouth and what comes into their minds and their brains are going to be controlled.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's time for a break here, Pastor, on that great thought. And we're going to come back after this break here on Stronghold Radio and all the other outlets. And hopefully you're picking up what he's putting down, people. It's a clarion call. And we're going to continue down this thread right after
They're
this.
They're calling us right-wing extremists, and they mock us on TV. Because we're united to defend our constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing Americans who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Up till now, I always thought our vets were real patriots who loved their country with all their hearts. Oh, they proudly wore the uniform. They fought and died on foreign shores when liberty called them to do their part.
Still want that to burn up again.
Now the Department of Homeland Security
has sounded the alarm, calling our vets a bigger threat than the terrorists who want to do us harm. They're calling us right-wing extremists, and they mock us on TV, 'cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing conservatives who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. We tend to be pro-life all the way. We're not ashamed to bow our heads to pray. The First Amendment gives us the right to speak our minds. We don't like how our money is spent by politicians who seem bent on controlling everything in our lives. They're even calling us rednecks and racists, 'cause we don't like the policies of our nation's first black president in our great history. They're calling us right-wing extremists, and they mock us on TV, 'cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing daughters and sons who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemies. Number one, through our faith in God, who we still trust, America was born. But freedom lost is forever gone. Our founding fathers won. And they mock us on TV, 'cause we're united to defend our Constitution and fight against tyranny. We are proud, God-fearing patriots who cling to our faith and our guns. So now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Yes, now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one. Yes, now they have the feds all watching us like we're enemy number one.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
If you're in the battle for the Lord and right, just keep on the fight and right. If you win the battle, surely you must fight, so keep on the fight and right. Brother, keep on the fight and right.
That's what we're doing every day here at Stronghold Radio. Thank you for tuning in, whether you're listening on Liberty Tree Radio, Indiana Freedom Talk Radio, 11 meters up there in upstate New York. We thank you, pod people, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you so very much. This is Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, and we're talking about getting ready for calamity and no excuses, I think would be a good way to put it. And we're going to continue on. Pastor, if you're ready, we'll just take it right there.
All right, folks, welcome back. If you just joined us, we're in the book of Genesis, chapter 47, and verse 21. We're talking about the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine and how that applies to us today, that God's given us grace and to do all the preparations that we do and that there are no excuses for not preparing. Mm-hmm. We were looking at verse 21. It says, as for the people he removed, this is Joseph, he removed them from the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt even to the other end thereof. He removed them to the cities. And so there's nothing necessarily sinister in this, folks. He removed them to the cities because it's easier to dispense. He doesn't have the time to go 100 miles away at the outskirts
logistics.
Of Egypt. It's a logistical issue, so it's not necessarily sinister. But with the New World Order crowd and the ConAgra crowd and the the DuPont and the seeds, what's that germinate, that famous seed? You always help me out, Dutch, on that. But anyway.
Come on, help us, folks, in the chat room. It's the Monsanto.
Monsanto, Dutch. Yeah, you always rescue me there when I have a brain pop. So anyway, with those types of things going on, it is more sinister. But this time with Joseph, it's just simply logistics, folks. It was easier to dispense the food in the city. So people, and that's where the granaries were. You know, they didn't have trains to get it out, 100 miles away in an hour or two. So it's just the simple. But I was saying for the break, that's precisely where we don't want to go, because in those cities is where they're going to control us. They're going to control, especially with the New World Order crowd, they're going to control our minds and the minds of our children and not allow them to be taught in the ways of the Lord, and that we would be indoctrinated. So, folks, that's why we're preparing. That's why we have a nucleus of believers, and we see the evil day, as Proverbs 22 tells us. We're prudent. We're foreseeing it. We're hiding. We're making preparations for that time of calamity. So now in verse 23, we're going to jump down to verse 23. Then Joseph said to the people, behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. And here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. They actually sold themselves into slavery just so they could survive. That's what I don't want to do, folks. I'm not interested in that. And it came to pass in the increase that you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh. So now you're working for Pharaoh. And fourth part shall be your own, for the seed of the field, for your food, and for them of your households, and your food and your little ones. Verse 25, and they said, thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. Literally, we'll be Pharaoh's slaves just for food. Just for food, wow. Folks. That's not what we are wanting to do. Now, I want to change horses just a little bit here and talk to you about one of the things that maybe you haven't been looked at recently in reference to the Day of Calamity and preparation. I'm reading from an author here by the name of Gene Edwards and his work that he did a number of years ago. He says, preparation for a depression or a worldwide meltdown of civilization, in both cases, the preparation is essentially the same. How long would you exist if unemployed or out of money? Mm-hmm. The average American is not prepared for any emergency. Most of us would be out of food in a week. They tell me, Dutch, that the people that are actually investing in gold and silver is like 1% or less of the
whole population.
It's just, I've heard that from several monetary people, precious metals people, that it's like 1% of the population or less. And folks, that's unacceptable in the Christian community. It should be unacceptable in the Christian community. In life, in depression, in catastrophe, our needs are the same. Water, food, shelter, light, heat, medicine, real money, and he says, and add to that, cheap transportation. Mm-hmm. So he's encouraging people to have a bike on hand and be ready to go if you need to go from place to place on a bike. Because for a lot of us, it's not feasible to store gas in large quantities, so that would soon run out. Although, many of us do, but not everybody can. Be you rich or poor, be you urban or suburban, small town or rural, if all the money you have in banks and stocks disappear, how much of the above survival items do you have? True, this is living cheap and minimal, but you also survive. When there is a depression or catastrophe, soon thereafter there arises an ancient phenomenon, and this is what we're going to talk about the next half hour with Dutch here. Out of nowhere there comes the reappearance of a marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
This is the flea market. So we got a flea market in Visalia. It's a town of about a little 110,000 people, and there is a flea market that happens every Thursday, and I think maybe on Sunday as well.
Yes.
But we're going to see folks in Visalia. We would see not just a Thursday and Sunday flea market in one location, but probably every 3 miles you will see flea markets on every
corner. However far people are willing to travel to get to market.
To get what they need. So now he's going to talk about this, folks, and give us understanding. The primitive marketplace is is almost as instinctive as biology. The primitive marketplace is the place where people all go in order to find and purchase that which is necessary for survival. In other words, you're going to go in your neighborhood corner, maybe just two or up to 3 miles away, and that's where you're going to look for the survival needs that you may have need of.
And the interesting thing about that is in the previous hour I said, if you go back just 80 years, that's the way everything functioned anyway. They did need to bring stuff outside by train in, the like big tractors and things like that around the industrialization era in America. But before that, the Rendezvous of the Mountain Men is probably where you could point to the first one, where they met every season, changing of the seasons, you know, summer, winter kind of thing. But then in the smaller towns and communities throughout Europe, you think about Bosnia-Herzegovina during that war. They did the same thing there. It's as far as you can get safely with the produce that you're growing or whatever you're making. You're making mittens. You don't want to have to carry the produce too far and destroy it. So that's where the economy is going to rise up. And the local economies will be as different as the people that live in those areas.
Right here we don't necessarily need those Mickey Mouse snow boots. You know, that won't be probably too much on the tables of the flea market. We're below the snow line.
No.
But in Michigan, Mickey Mouse boots will be everywhere.
It's like we had the one person you always talk about. I can't remember who specifically is, the King of Kauai, because he's stocking up on toilet paper.
The King of Kauai.
All he can do is buy toilet paper.
Because he's poor,
and
he's doing his stewardship the best that he can. Because he knows he's traveled around the world. He knows that toilet paper is a
luxury people will go for first.
Yeah. So now back to Gene Edwards. As in the collapse of the Roman Empire, everything will revert to neighborhood life.
Yeah.
Your life, your survival will be found in a 3 mile circle. Yeah. See, folks, if we're not willing to get into Christian community, God has a way of forcing people to get into community, whether they like it or not.
Outside forces will do it.
And sometimes outside forces do it. So a flea market will open somewhere near you in that 3 mile circle. Always when civilizations collapse, life begins again around that ancient, venerable, primitive, unstoppable marketplace.
The shopping mall.
The shopping mall. No matter how poor it may be, and I've been in third world countries, and everywhere is that little marketplace, and however
the
meager...
The tables.
Yeah, however meager it may be on those tables, it's there.
Truck beds with the tailgate down and some crates of produce.
Exactly. The marketplace, or bazaar, will live again. That's another word we could use, the bazaar. Men and women come to that marketplace to find one thing, items which are necessary for the survival of life. And that's what we want to have on hand, is those items which are necessary for survival. This is an immutable law of natural economics. And so in a tough time, this is a natural law that this is what people are going to be needing. Whenever the currencies of the world become valueless, the local marketplace becomes the way the world does business. The marketplace becomes the distribution system.
Yes.
This is where it's going to be. So what is the market? Or what is in the market? What is in the market? Food, clothing, heat, and the other necessities of life.
Tools, everything.
Tools, yeah. The market works the same way it did when it originated 8,000 years ago. It's what you need to survive in a given locale. That's what you're going to see. Now, you are going to see a few extravagant things.
Books.
That one day, brought, precious, somebody bought for precious funds, because somebody that had prepared, they may could pick it up for a song and a dance.
Yes.
You know, because they need it so bad.
It's going to turn on its head.
Yeah.
A hand-driven drill and bit set will be worth a fortune. But a rechargeable drill might not be worth anything unless you've got a means to recharge it.
Exactly. That's a good example. That market on the street was a crucial part of American history and did not disappear from our land until the late 1930s when a national distribution system came into existence.
Yeah.
Because, before trucking and the trains that could get us produce fast, before it perished, you had to get your produce locally.
Not big warehouses locally obtaining and storing for distribution locally.
Yeah, we didn't have the refrigeration and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
He says, my grandparents drove from Commerce, Texas to Greenville, Texas almost every Saturday to buy and sell. Everyone came in cars, wagons, and on horseback, and bikes. That marketplace is man's economic history. That is how man has always bought and sold, and that is how he survived. Now, I'm coming to a point here eventually, folks, as we look through this. Call it a law of human survival or call it the instincts of survival. There are no rules, no ordinances, nor laws in this market.
No
government regulations and no government interference.
Free market at its purest form.
Yeah, free market at its purest form, because even the government officials are going to be there needing what's in their local marketplace. So they're not going to regulate it through taxation. It's a great leveler. They're not going to worry if the food was produced at home in a non-union standard kitchen. All these repulsive county tyrannical regulations we're under, that's all going to fall by the wayside, because those county regulators and those that are wanting the compliance, as we've been talking about, Dutch, they're going to be starving too, and they don't care.
Yeah, and if they try it, they'll reinstitute tar and feathering.
Yeah, it just ain't going to happen.
We learned.
No ledger entry money here in the marketplace. Not much worthless pulp circulating here that he's talking about, ferns, paper money.
No credit.
Take a close look at this market. It is driven solely by supply and demand. Learn from this market. Here is naked, raw, primitive, honest, real, unmanipulated, organic economics. Note the term organic economics, folks, for another time. Here is the place the laws of economics, written into the fabric of creation, are at work in their freest form. You have no job, let's say. Your company no longer exists. You and everyone else in your community must go to that market in order to survive. When you arrive at the market, everyone will be thinking survival. What do you have right now to bring to that market? What do you have, folks? What do you have that you could bring to that market? What you bring must be something which the market needs.
Yes.
No, it must be something which that market needs desperately. Here are the elements of survival which you will find for sale. Water or water purification for that water, food, heat, shelter, and medicine. The medium of exchange? First, basic bartering items. The money, then money, real money. There are four items which are certain to be accepted as money by everyone. Food, gold, possibly paper cash, and silver. Mm-hmm. And one other thing, the art of buying and selling anything which has to do with survival. So whatever it is, if people want it for survival, hose, shovels, whatever.
Means of production.
Here you find the exchange of goods for goods. We're going back to bartering. The exchange of goods for services. Somebody might say, listen, I don't have anything, but I need that sack of potatoes. I'll come and work your garden for, you know, 2 days
or a week.
Barter
will be recreated.
Barter will be happening. But we have to have tools to barter with, folks.
Mm-hmm.
The exchange of exotic metal coins for goods and services. These are money in the marketplace. Again, here is pure, unmanipulated economics. What do you have right now to bring to that market? A little? Some? Get more. You need to make a decision. Do I believe this scenario will happen? Do I at least believe it is probable? Will I act now? I know such a world sounds remote, but it is not.
It's happened again and again throughout societies for 6,000 years.
It's exactly right, Dutch. If this marketplace becomes reality, how prepared are you? What can you bring to the market? What do you have that is market needs? Now remember, this is supposing that you're in an area that you won't, on your way to the market, get robbed and, you know, pillaged on the way there. So this is supposing that you have the ability to get there safely and to return from the marketplace safely, like, you know, walking through the byways and have your uncharted, you know, way to get there.
Yep.
The ancient marketplace will return in some form, even if it turns out we only have a moderate depression.
Yeah.
A depression and the market go hand in hand. What are you going to do now to be a participator in a survivalist market? Hope it goes away? Fine. In the meantime, prepare for the absolute worst. Now I'm reading this because this is where I wanted to get to, folks. Everyone will be looking for only a few things: water, food, clothes, shelter, heat, medicine, real money and seeds. Let's talk about medicine for a moment.
Yeah.
I just had my wife and I, we just stocked up again this winter, Dutch, on NyQuil and DayQuil, because it just makes your life so much easier. For those two or three days when you've got the flu, if you can go to bed with NyQuil, man, it just makes life.
Takes a huge edge off.
I had a cold the day, Dutch, we were doing the hand-to-hand combat, and so I took DayQuil. Yeah. I could not have participated in those 2 days of training if I didn't have DayQuil. The reason why I couldn't have participated is because I would have been snotting my hands on everybody's hands that were grabbing me, and it would have been just so gross with me, with my nose running like a faucet. And the DayQuil stopped my nose so that I could participate in the training. Now, I might have given my cold to somebody. They probably came home from that with a cold. But that was the way it is. I could not have trained without the DayQuil because my hands would have been too full of snot. And that's crude, folks, but that's part of the medicines that we stuck up in. Yeah. So people would do a lot for a bottle of NyQuil in a time of...
Think how much better an overnight guard duty would be with a little bit of DayQuil to keep, you know, so you're not knocked out, but you get all the other problems curbed.
Exactly, exactly. See, so everyone will be looking for only a few things: water, food, clothes, shelter, heat, medicine, real money, and seeds. And I'm going over a lot of these basic things because I know, Dutch, you deal with them regularly.
No, it's always a good reminder.
All else is peripheral. When you get to the market, you will be either a seeker of goods or a provider of goods. That choice is up to you. The time is now. And, folks, this is the point I wanted to get at. That's why I'm reading to you about the primitive marketplace. What will you take to the primitive marketplace? Will you be a provider of goods at the marketplace? Therefore, you can exercise godly dominion as people are coming to you. Or are you going to be the one who's having to seek the goods at the marketplace because you didn't prepare and you didn't get ready? So now you're selling everything, but including the family farm and including maybe perhaps the lives of your children into slavery.
Just
because all you are is a seeker of goods. You are not a provider of goods.
Right.
The market is brutal. It always has been. It is no place. It is the place of raw, naked reality. You don't have what I want? Sorry. If you own a Rembrandt, no one will want it. If you own a beautiful antiques, no one will buy them. If you own a Rolls Royce, no one will care.
Yeah.
Further, there is nothing in the way of furniture in your house anyone is going to want unless it is in your silverware or wood for furniture for the
firewood.
Fire.
Firewood, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing because you think of how we've become a service industry, too. There, I can think of only a handful of services that you could even barter with. And one, of course, medicine. If you're the local doc or dentist along those lines, or medicinal herbalist, you might be able to not have any materials but a skill that you could sell. Then maybe second would be security.
Yes.
You might be able to, you know, like let's say when I first moved up here when I had nothing because I lost everything in a fire, I had a family tell me if anything happens, you and your daughter can live on our ranch and provide security for my wife and kids while we do run the ranch. That was something that they offered because they knew I was in a position that, you know, so that would be realistic. So it's scary to think that how many of us, like right now, radio, there's nothing. I'm not going to be useful to anybody if that's my only skill set.
Okay.
You might have teachers, preachers. You might be able to do that. But other than that, a guy who can do your taxes isn't going to be all that viable.
That's not going to help. You'll still have teachers, preachers. They'll work for just hand to mouth. Because people will still want their children to be educated.
Yes.
Education goes on even in a crisis.
Yeah.
And so they still have their place, but they work for bread and water only.
The best thing we can hope for, I think, is a little house on the prairie scenario where there'll be a little township. The church, school will be the center of the town.
Yes.
There'll be merchants around it. It may be hard, and nothing ever goes exactly as the past. We tend to try and repeat the past. It doesn't. But it's going to be material goods will make you a king or a pauper. And I hate to say that, but you've got to be real select in what those material goods are. And our host that lets us go on his network, Liberty Tree Radio, those folks over there, Mark Kornke's always talking about learning how to fix shoes. It's a lost art.
Yes.
And buying shoes that can be repaired, not the junky tennis shoe-looking boots that a lot of people buy for $25. You get a good pair of boots that can be repaired.
I like that. I think Mark's right on. I've often thought about the cobbler skills. Matter of fact, through the years, I go to antique stores and I buy those stands, and the little shoes that you put
big needles.
It's actually a foot, like a metal foot plate, and you put the shoe over it so that you can work on it and mold and things like that. And so these are things that we can be looking for, folks, for the survival type items. When you're in a bookstore looking for a economic doomsday book or whatever that will give you, just for instance, I don't have a lot of those survival skills, Dutch, but I have just about every book so
reference
that I can
books.
Look. And my wife was just recently, she just took down one of those reference books, and folks, we took, because we have an orchard, a fruit orchard, and we made apricot puree to drink, like Kern's apricot nectar out here on the West Coast. Kern's apricot nectar is real popular.
Like a smoothie?
It's thick. Apricot nectar, it's a thick drink.
Okay.
But we didn't know how to do it, but we had the book,
and
we made apricot nectar. We dried cherries. And we dried apricots as well. And so we have the books that provide us those teaching tools.
Yeah.
And so
Lou and I are going to be jerky masters. We've got the kit. His grandpa taught us, and we're going to be doing that.
That's going to be
one of our
meat.
Things. Yeah, water purification, meat, whatever we can do. And it's amazing. And you look at and you talk about the currency thing. If I can, I've got about 4 minutes. Remember in Patriots, you know, from SurvivalBlog.com.
James Wesley Rawls.
Great book. I highly recommend it. 22 shells were currency at that first swap meet, wasn't it? You know, guy bought sandals and whatever, you know, all different things and traded for 22 shells.
You know, Dutch, I've been seeing on the way to Fresno, there is a big billboard, and it says, "We buy shoes, no matter what condition, as long as they're in a pair." Now, I'm not sure, I don't know, but it just that you mentioned, I want to get that across. Somebody in Fresno County is buying shoes, and if they say, "We don't care, as long as they're a pair."
Could be a ministry or something.
Could be a ministry, but who knows, but it could be also, because, you know, when you go to the... Shoes are thrown out all the time.
Yeah.
And shoes are going to be very, very...
And that's something I wanted to get on in the last few minutes.
Okay, good.
We're a very wasteful society. Yeah. You've got to rethink your stewardship of what God has given you. Things that you would normally reuse may not need to go... Excuse me, I said it backwards. You may throw away, may be sustainable and reusable. I'm not talking to go wash your paper plates and all that kind of stuff. Don't be ridiculous. But take a look at your shoes. What can you really get out of them? A cosmetic blemish doesn't mean they don't function.
Or you might have them survival for to take. You may not wear them again, but you might
have to trade them to somebody else. You may go, "Hey, I've got the latest, greatest voodoo tactical gear. I don't need this World War II web gear." Don't get rid of it. Yeah. Hang on to it. Put it together in a kit. You could trade a full-on battle gear set for you don't know what you're going to need. Because you can never, I don't know of any one family or even one group that can think up and save everything they're going to need. I think it's physically impossible.
It is.
I had a plan when I was homeless that I thought, well, if I could get 10 to 15 people together, we could just take a Walmart and hold it. And then I'd have almost everything I need, you know. But you can't really do that. It's not feasible. There's always more of them than there are of you, and everybody else is going to have that same plan.
There's the moral factors of doing that either.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to be allowed to take and seize other people's things. It can't be done. So the more you stash away today, the more that you're a good steward of the materials you have, then you can use that money to get something else. Instead of going out when your boots are 50% worn out and, you know, and going, well, now I need to have a brand new pair of boots, maybe wear them a little longer, extend your resources, plan your economics of your household or everything, and be a good steward of what you have and look for those things. I every day I can think of 10 things that I want, and then I have to go, okay, what's realistic? We had talked about water purification. We've got enough water purifiers that I could sell jugs of water to people that's purified.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
I've got water filters that will do 1 million gallons before they have to be cleaned. There's a reason I chose that product. I could set up a huge 500-gallon tank if I had to and just start doing it and selling gallon jugs of water to people.
And we're in an area where you just go to the river. You have that ability to take from the river.
Yeah.
So, folks, we're just reemphasizing that. What are you going to take to that primitive marketplace, to that bazaar? Are you going to be a provider of goods, or are you going to be a seeker of goods? You don't want to be that seeker of goods, folks, because now you still have the opportunity. And let me just say, well, how much time we got?
A minute.
Okay, Dutch, I'd like to say in the ending here, folks, it's a matter of stewardship. If you don't, and let's say, for instance, all you make at the end of the month is you've got an extra $20-$30 of your mad money. Be a good steward. If you only got $20 to invest in survival, you don't have $200 or $2,000, take $5, take that $10 and get a couple cans of beans, maybe get a silver quarter pre-1964. Mm-hmm. Just take that small amount and be a good steward with it. We're not talking about, you don't have to go out and get paid $2,000 or $200. It might be $10, and then you rest in the Lord because you have something to provide.
That's right. That's right. In the immortal words of that song, you don't have to live like a refugee. Tom Petty. But if you don't make plans, you don't have a choice in the fact. And you don't need to look very far around the world to see what being a refugee gets you. Folks, you've been listening to Stronghold Radio. We've had Pastor Warren Mark Campbell on here with Practical Christianity. And again, the pastor is the pastor at the Church of Cahuilla in Cahuilla, California. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more verses and sermons and stuff coming from the teachings of Pastor Warren here, all you need to do is go to www.thechurch.com. The letters A-T, Kawea, K-A-W-E-A-H, .org. And we've got a link there on dutchjones.info, and you can find sermons there. There's links to a sermon that he gave to the state legislature in Montana's on there. There's so much that you can do. There's so much that you can do, and you can learn from these. So keep listening, keep tuning in, and remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, The victory belongs to the Lord alone, but he's giving you a chance to get ready for the battle. Don't turn your back on him now. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening. God bless you in all you do in the holy cause of liberty.